Well, in my three sons of the bell, the sound of the bell is like a good friend calling us back home. Where is our home? In the present moment, here and now, when our mind and body unite, we're connected with the earth and heavens. Maybe when we're at peace in our heart, we can feel at home. What does home mean for us? And with the sound of the bell, we can follow our breathing. And maybe we, on the in-breath, want to have a sense of arriving. With the out-breath, sense of a feeling at home. It's helpful for us, we can say the words quietly to ourselves. On the in-breath, arrived. The out-breath, home. Simply touch that feeling, that experiencing of slowing down, of stopping, of arriving, of feeling at home. Dear Mother Earth, dear all beings in the animal, plants, and mineral worlds, dear friends, we're gathering to practice mindfulness, and with the theme of the art of love. And so for me to be aware, to be mindful, is already kindness. Because mindfulness doesn't judge, it doesn't discriminate, but it meets what is going on inside and around us moment by moment with acceptance. The sense of respect is like recognition. Ah, I know you are there. I know what's going on. I can feel it. I can experiencing it. And this is wonderful capacity we all have, and it can be cultivated and seep into more and more aspects of our lives, more and more of our actions in daily life, and deeper into our consciousness in meditation. And so when I practice love, I feel very close to kind of two core principles in Buddhism of non-discrimination, of non-dualistic thinking, and also of non-harming. Like not harming means we care, we support. and not discriminating. It's easy to love the sweet and the lovely aspects in ourselves and others. Thing that we have been taught is beautiful and good. It's easy to feel a sense of connection and love and care for. But can we expand this love to include all the different aspects of ourselves, of each other? Can we let this immeasurable mind of love even include those presently causing harm? That's the practice of a bodhisattva, awakened being, wanting to spread love and understanding. And so I'll share a little bit around the aspects of true love and with experience, maybe some stories, but it comes back to the root of being aware, being mindful. It makes things possible somehow. And it has the wonderful quality. It's like with love too, it helps to nourish and grow the thing that is beautiful and good in our lives. Just being aware of our happiness, it can grow. Being aware of our peace, it can deepen. And the miraculous thing of being aware of our anxiety, being aware of our envy, can also actually help calm it. Is amazing. So it's, for me, it also indicates who we are, what we are, that we're beings of love and awareness of clarity. We're not beings to compete and to fight against each other. Actually, at our core, we're loving, connecting beings. We see this when we become aware, and actually the things that is preventing us to be in our rightful place, be in our love, be in our light of insight, it calms just with awareness. At the same time as the qualities that help open and connect us actually grows. So for me, this is, okay, so it's maybe not just an idea. There's something deeper. The Buddha and ancestral teachers of many traditions, they tap into something deeper of actually the nature of things. And so for me, that's one of the things that really inspired me with the Buddha's teaching and made it possible for me to be a Buddhist monk for a long time, was that the Buddha wanted to understand, because he saw there was suffering, he wanted to help relieve suffering. And just by wanting to understand, seeing how come, didn't seek a theory or a dogma for the world, but just wanting to see clearly. And so from that, like that aspiration, that volition, that could also connect with the song in my heart, like, yeah, I do care for people. I do care for others. I want them not to suffer, but I don't understand how. You know, and I'm still suffering. I don't understand. So it's, we're helping ourselves is also a great help for others, actually. So that is where also this non-discriminative thinking can come in, the non-dualistic backbone in Buddhism and other traditions. That actually love connects us and helps to expand. And so one meditation that is common is metta meditation, or maitri in Sanskrit. It means love and kindness. Comes from the word mitra, which means friend. So what is a friend to us? What does it mean to be a friend? In some ceremonies where we're bowing gratitude to our teachers, our parents, our friends, we bow to our friends in gratitude because they're there for us. They're there in our life, but they're also there in difficult moments. And so I see that for myself too, like a friend, can they be there for and with me when I'm also suffering, when I'm also not at my loveliest? And so that also, can I befriend myself in that way? Was there judgment? Is there rejection of the thing that I don't like in myself? Or can I be friendly, befriend even those elements? And we can practice with what qualities we want to nourish actually and get in contact with. May I be happy? May I be safe? May my heart be filled with joy? May I be light in body and mind? Is kind of some core ones we can practice with. But we can also practice in a way, if we're able, and we start getting more familiar with the seeds, the qualities, the potentials in our consciousness, and able to touch them. Like, I am happiness. I'm safety. I don't need even, I'm safe already when I understand my connection with everything. That I'm not limited to this idea of a personality or a self or a body or this idea. Now I'm 52 years old and I maybe have 30 healthy years in front of me idea. And we're connected with the divine, if we will, if with heaven, with earth, with the net of life. We're already safe. So we can kind of take a shortcut. I am safety, or just safety. I'm safe. Happiness. We can touch happiness and joy just in like inviting that seed to sprout. When I connect with joy, is like a bubbling spring from like, it feels like it's coming up my spine inside the body, like bubbling up. And sometimes even when I feel joyful, it gets, it can also like make a flood. It makes me want to do many things. I'm inspired and I feel like I have boundless energy. But then sometimes my body doesn't have that cannot keep up. If I ground that kind of bubbling sense of joy in my heart, it becomes a little bit more mature and it becomes settled. So it's like, it's almost like happiness. Happiness, there's more peace in it. There's more maturity, contentment in it. And so when we practice loving kindness, it's also the permission for us to touch these wonderful qualities inside. That's already there. It's within our garden already. It's within our soil. So the question, if they're blossoming or not, it means how they get watered, how they get nourished. And so the quality of compassion, like seeing and feeling the suffering and want to alleviate suffering. Is it there's one story also of the Buddha where I feel like this human compassion that comes out is when he's playing in the palace park and a swan drops to the ground with a feather. The feather has been pierced by an arrow and is bleeding and obviously in pain. And so the Buddha comes up and like want to relieve the pain and suffering of the swan. And so carries it in, I forget how old he was, like 10, 12 maximum, something like that. And start tending the swan. And then his cousin Devadatta comes running with a bow around his shoulder. Like, do you see my swan, cousin? I just shot the swan, it's mine. Because I shot it's mine. And then he sees that Siddhartha is about to take care of the same swan. And Siddhartha says, no, it's mine because I want to give it life. There's that principle of compassion coming through, that like wisdom coming through, that no, like to support and nourish life. It actually is not that you own it because you want to support it. you want to set it free in a way because you want to relieve the suffering so it can continue to move around as a swan wants to move around. So it's like you want to set it free. You don't want to own it and trap it. And eventually the king and the council agreed that Siddhartha had the right to take care of the swan. But even there, like what, sometimes with our love, we want to possess someone, something. We want to control it. We're not wanting to set them free. Yeah. Is our love setting the other person free? It might be in a couple relationship or with children, friends. Who we have a kind, caring, loving relationship with? Is it that my love is making the person happier? We're practicing loving kindness. Is it helping them relieve suffering? And are they willing to show their suffering for us and trusting us with their suffering? Then compassion can come through. And is it the love that offers space? Like when you arrange flowers, beautiful natural flowers we have with us. But they also need some space. If you have like 1,000 flowers and you put them tight together, you cannot see the flower. It cannot offer its beauty, its uniqueness. So it's also like that. We all need space to live and thrive and to, So sometimes when we love someone, we want to make sure they don't suffer. We want to make sure they're free from harm. We want to make them happy all the time. So we might get too close. We might not trust them. One aspect of true love that Thay introduced and kind of added is trust. Can we trust that they also have the seed of happiness and freedom in them, in compassion in them, to be able also to take care of their own suffering? How can we nourish that in the other person? Because we know that just one person cannot do much. I can maybe take care of my own suffering and care for my own happiness. But how many others can I be there for? How can we trust and help each other to grow from the inside out? And so today actually is my 2-year anniversary with my wife. We got married 2 years ago today. And well, I see my practice of and training in nourishing my own happiness, knowing how to take care of my suffering, has been such valuable assets in our relationship. And she's done the same, like in different ways and from a different path. But like when you're with someone that can hold themselves enough, they can maybe cry and be vulnerable and sad, but it's not like, you know. They don't need to dump it on you because there's also care and stability and compassion in them. And it's much easier. And I forget when it was, but at a certain point she said, like, I feel stronger being married to you. I said, okay, it's working. You're giving this space. It's like, you're free. I can be more myself. And I feel the same. I feel like backed up and supported in a way that I can relax. I can be myself. Then I can grow. If we're trying to pretend someone to be someone so the other person will love us, we feel like that person is looking for something in us. So that's what we want to show, and we cannot show the other sides. We cannot be free. We cannot be strong. Because we're like amputating ourselves. We're, you know, not including aspects of ourselves. And so when we practice love is for ourselves and for others, and it can expand and expand. This immeasurable minds can expand infinitely. And it doesn't always have to express itself through physical actions. Love and generosity can express itself just through in meditation, like breathing with someone. It's like, may you be happy and safe. May your heart be filled with joy. May you feel light in body and mind. And if we have that connection with those qualities within, and we can make a connection with that person, maybe it's like we sense that person in some way. Maybe we see them in front of us, or like maybe there's an experience that where we sat close together and we're like, almost like we can share these words, this quality with them directly. Because energy and prayer and this meditation is not limited to space and time in the way we think. In that sense, also our capacity to contribute is much vaster than we often remember. And so in situations where we feel afraid or we feel something is bothering us, it's more difficult to practice. How can I be open and loving in those situations? We're feeling something is wrong, it shouldn't be like that, and it's like, how does love fit in there? And so one way I practiced with this when I moved to Deer Park Monastery in 2006, I was kind of surprised over the military activity in Southern California. There's a native base, marine base close, or half an hour drive away or something. So there would be choppers coming through the air quite often. We had a big area up in the mountains for the monastery. And so it's like a part of me feeling like, wow, coming from Europe and coming from Sweden, it's like a little bit more rare. Like in some village in France, maybe we heard some jet fighters coming past like a couple of times a year or something. And this is like several times a week. And so, okay, wow, okay, okay. Well, how can I relate to this? And so like, okay, may you be at peace. May you don't have to use all the arms that's on your helicopter. You don't have to go to war. Yeah. And how to make that opportunity into at least something seemingly positive, knowing that it won't, they're training for a certain purpose. And many other fellow military are dispatched in conflicts. But still, I don't want to create more violence and war through discriminating and judging and complaining about it. Like, oh, you're invading all my meditation space. You shouldn't be here. This is a quiet, peaceful monastery. No, the war, the conflict within can start very easily. And then how can there be a peace on the outside if we don't cultivate the peace inside? So in these moments, it might be a moment, a situation, something in our lives that triggers us. Can we like be aware of it and feel how, it's not like to override our feeling like that of like sadness over that there's so much war and violence in the world that I sense, or like, wow, this is kind of disturbing, like it's such a different vibe from what we're doing here. So like noticing that and being aware of that, and okay, yeah, and now it's here. You know, I cannot stop that right now. So like, how can I at least change? What I can control is my response to it. Our reaction come automatically, like, but you can calm that and see, how do I want to respond? So I chose peace in that moment. And there was a lot of airplanes coming by. Sometimes we hear an airplane too taking off from Vilnius or about to land in Vilnius, the airport. And so they were coming in and out of San Diego there and going northeast. And I've been on a plane. So I know like up there, there's like a couple of hundred people and they're either going home to their family or leaving their family. They're with friends or colleagues, or they're going somewhere like, so they have people in their lives that both maybe send them off and kind of greet them. And so like, huh, may you be safe up there. May you arrive safely and may you be well. That was also something that I just kind of trained myself. And sometimes you forget and sometimes it feels more like real. So now when I hear and see sirens in the city, in the small town where we live, the police station is just a couple of blocks away and the fire station is like kind of 5 minutes away, but they have to pass through the main street that's not too far from us if they're going out into different smaller places. So when I hear the sirens, okay, yeah, maybe be safe. May it work out. May it be okay. And also thinking somehow the police and the ambulance and the fire saviors. There's so many violent terms in our languages, like firefighters. Yeah, when I was sick, it's like, and some people say, like, we're going to fight cancer, we're going to make war on this and make war on that. It's like, that doesn't make us whole. So these things that might be triggers for us to feel worried or feel like fearful, because even the siren make us be extra alert. So that sound just by itself might touch a seed of fear in me and an insecurity in me. What is it touching? When we're in situations, is it some sound, some sight that touches something in us? Maybe we see a group of people, we hear a certain language, something is touching us. You know, can we come back into our heart space? Like, I've noticed when I breathe into the heart and feel like there's a kindness, I feel kind of the safety. Maybe not because I won't get sick, I won't die, I won't get injured sometimes. No, but because I'm connecting. I'm connecting to reality, to what I truly am when there's kindness in my heart, when I open my heart. In those situations, you also want to be happy and well. Whoever it is, they also want to be happy and well, even if they're not aware of it. Deep down, they also want to be happy and well and care for their families and live a safe life and whatever. So this is where the practice can help us go into upeksha, equanimity, inclusiveness, we could call it. Like, we're not discriminating the mind. And here, like, as I was growing up and hearing stories about Jesus, this is what really touched me, some kind of a intuitive feeling of that kind of love that includes everyone. Like the ones that people would exclude or create division between, like, Jesus, invite them. Yeah, I'll have a dinner with the tax collectors. I'll go to the leopards. I'll cure anyone that needs to. Huh? Right? It's beautiful. Yeah, that modeling of upeksha, of inclusiveness, because also then there's the insight of interbeing, of non-separation, non-duality, that we're actually part of a whole. And there's so many wonderful role models we can read about and hear about and see, both past and present, that expresses love in different ways, right? In the book I was reading, they were talking about a social worker in Stockholm, and it was as the city was growing, a lot of people moved in from the countryside in this place. When I first came back to Stockholm, actually, I lived very close to this. My mom had an apartment close to this place. It's called the White Mountains. It's like a hill in the southern part of Sweden. And they started, there were factories along the coast, in the waters. And so that was like a kind of a slum, Stockholm slum, 100 plus years ago. And in this book, she shares some stories about how they were like helping starving and abused children, how to like provide health and health care and some hygienic education, and like just being there for people suffering immensely and having to work in horrific situations and conditions. And that's just a couple of generations ago. And that is a beautiful park with a big beautiful church on top, and people like to go there. Like a peaceful place, so it's kind of transformed. But there's some these small, low, old wood houses left in the neighborhood and on the mountain itself as a kind of remembrance. I was like, oh wow, what our ancestors gone through, you know? That's just one example of what ancestors from my hometown have gone through, but for all of us, the hardship they had to overcome to be here, like that is also of love for their children, I'll care sometimes for their friends and country and countrymen. Can it expand? Yeah, this word I was seeking. Can it expand? Because we have in a way, more fruitful conditions also to touch actually the conditions of happiness that we do have, the conditions of safety that we do have. How can we share it with those that don't? Because there have never been more people on this planet that are starving and they don't have clean water. Because population growth have, escalated so quickly. So still with all this progress, there's still more hungry people in the world than ever. Like, oh, wow. And so that's also like this, we talked about the serenity prayer the other day, like how can I accept the things I cannot change? Like, but is there something I can do? How can I use generosity in what I do have surplus in time, energy, resources? How can this also maybe, this compassion, maybe also help me to change my priorities in life? How much time do I have to live and to share with others? And how much am I just working to accumulate things? Sometimes our work is also helping others. So, but just that, am I doing something that's actually preventing me from doing what I most dearly would like to contribute in this life? And not forgetting ourselves, to care for ourselves, to be sustainable and to be able to continue to love and care and be there. We have to be here for ourselves. And that's kind of a respect. There's another aspect that the Thai introduced, respect. A way to respect each other and, a way of honoring what you've gone through in your life. All the different situations that make us exactly who we are right now. In our wedding ceremony, we had a one element of the wedding ceremony that we did on our own together with friends. It was that we took turns in like bowing, and I honor everything you've gone through and you've that taken you to this moment. And so to see like we are the way we are because of both suffering and difficult situations and good conditions, can we respect and honor that? And then there can be a little bit more peace. We don't have to be worried about, and we don't have to tell everything that's happened in our life, but we know that the other person, our partner, our friend is like, okay, I know you've been through different things, and I honor you for who you are. I respect you that you are in my life right now. I cherish that. That's also a way of expressing love. There's a mentioning joy and the bubbling sensation of joy that I can touch. And an element of true love is what I like to use the translation sympathetic joy, because it helps us to rejoice with the other person's joy. It's like a remedy for competition, it's a remedy for envy in a way. Like, how can I rejoice when someone else is doing great? Or do I go into comparisons? Oh, how come they're like get this job? How come they're living this beautiful house? Ah, me, how about me? And so, okay. We don't know the full story behind it, but can I, when I see people or hear, experience people in my life, they're very joyful about something, can I rejoice with them? So in a way, letting their joy be my joy. There's a song, "Your joy is my joy. My joy is your joy. Your joy is my joy for sure." And it's like, wow. Then there will be a lot more joy in the world, right? And joy also help us to overcome like some stagnation. I feel like it's a life-giving, circulating energy too. And it also help us to play. Yeah, sometimes when we practice meditation or spirituality, we can become a little bit serious and we want to make a big effort and then we think we'll have fruits. And sometimes we just need a little bit more of a playful joy within us to like it's kind of can help lubricate our system so we don't become too serious. And I had to practice this in for myself when I came to Plum Village. I was like, I'm gonna embrace my suffering, I'm gonna practice stably, I'm like not budging for anything. But cultivating joy didn't seem like I've been a pretty joyful person and pretty happy, but somehow with the practice, I was like, now I'm gonna go to the roots of my suffering. And so that is one aspect that I grew and got a lot of help from the community and the Vietnamese brothers, that the playfulness, the willingness to play and be joyful and like be light. Doesn't mean that we're not serious, it doesn't mean that we're not heartfelt or that we don't. But we know how to let go and play. We cannot work all the time. We cannot be like maybe in our business mode. We need to be a little bit more serious, maybe, or like taking our meditation practice seriously in a way like serious as we respect it. We see the value of it. We see the beauty of it. I want to do it like wholeheartedly. That can still be an openness. It can still be this gentle smile. And so, in practicing love, we can use a couple of mantras. I offer as many mantras. I just offer one of them. And it has a connection with this sympathetic joy. Is I know you're there, and it makes me very happy. For people in our lives, can we remember this? Like, we don't have to say it's like, ah, I know you are there and you make me very happy. If we say that to a colleague at work, maybe they're like, what? Maybe they will be very, and I know you are there and I'm very happy. Maybe they get it. Maybe not. But just show our appreciation like that. And, we'll practice later on some meditation on compassion and then also being open with our suffering for the people close to us that we trust and respect. Like, I'm suffering, I'm going through a difficult time. I just want you to know it. So maybe I'm not as calm, generous, or whatever as normal. So maybe I'm feeling a little bit irritated. I don't maybe even know why. But if we just let the people know, if we kind of it takes letting down the guard a little bit and trusting a little bit more that we'll be safe with this person. I'm sharing, I'm feeling a little bit irritated and frustrated right now. I'm not sure what it is. Maybe I do, but like, so you know. Yeah. And then the other person might be a little bit more patient, a little bit more understanding. So we can help each other like that just by communicating. So these mantras can be a way of communicating. Now, I said two of them already. I might as well say two more. I'm here for you. I like to say it also. I'm here with you, like a friend. Like, I'm here with you. That's a way of showing up. I'm present. This is a gift we can give. I know you're there and I'm very happy. Then we can also say or use, I know you're suffering and that's why I'm here for you. Maybe we just cook. Our friends or our loved ones' favorite meal because we see they're suffering, they're going through a hard time. But maybe they don't feel comfortable that we go straight to them and say, I see you suffer. That's why I'm here for you. You know? So what can we do to show that we know that we make things a little bit easier for them? We're extra generous. And this of I'm suffering. I want you to know it. And so, because they're immeasurable minds, we can cultivate them and practice them. And for me, I also see that it's is really no separation between practicing love and practicing insight and understanding how things are, because they, you know, it's like yin and yang, or masculine and feminine, or heaven and earth, or up and down. Like, you cannot really take them apart. They're in relationship with each other. So the Dharma is the path of understanding and love. So they're already like, they're together. So thank you so much for being together for this practice. And thank you for listening.